is the New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Hello again and welcome to the show. Coming up, we get the latest on the fires in New South Wales and also in Victoria as well. It's just over the border, of course. And we hear about one of the highest peaks in the world of a world record of shearing that's been conquered, with New Zealander Simon Goss shearing 732 ewes in 9 hours.
To be honest, I don't think it's quite set in just yet. Yeah, it's hard to put into words. When you start looking at the names, you know, the previous record holders, you know, have got their names on that list. Like, there's some absolute legends there. You know, the likes of, you know, Matt Smith himself, Rodney Sutton, Darren Ford, David Fagan. To then now have my name sitting next to theirs is something that will probably take a wee while to really sink in.
Yes, we'll hear from Simon Goss shortly in the program in about half an hour's time from now. But first up today, Victorians, they've been warned to prepare for more property losses as large parts of the state grapple with catastrophic fire conditions and two out-of-control bushfires. Three people apparently missing at the moment. A total fire ban's been declared for the state. Severe winds, temperatures exceeding 40 degrees Celsius, forecast across large areas. Emergency warnings continue for numerous communities, and the bushfire near Longwood in central Victoria has burnt through nearly 30,000 hectares, with property losses confirmed in the small town of Ruffey. And here in New South Wales, the RFS is monitoring the Victorian fires and also checking for signs of any ember strikes, as well as checking out some of the fires that we have existing in New South Wales as well. Just to get an update, we're joined now by Commissioner Trent Curtin. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, so the situation in Victoria, pretty bad. We do have fires burning in New South Wales, don't we? How are they going?
Yeah, we've got about 35 fires burning in New South Wales at the moment. Some of those are not yet contained, but we're on top of those at the moment, and we don't have any concerns about, you know, very serious concerns about those fires at this point in time, but we've definitely got plenty of firefighters and aircraft dealing with those at the moment.
Yeah, trying to get them under control, considering the heat and the wind that's going to ramp up this afternoon. I get the other thing is people are hearing, though, about plume, or that people are seeing plumes of smoke being watched from Corryong and also Holbrook as well over the border. They're concerned about the fires there getting closer to the border. What do we know about those fires? Have we seen any sort of embers coming across the river?
Yeah, at the moment, you know, predictions are that those fires won't come across the river. We did see a strike come across the river yesterday, which might have come from lightning or it may have been an ember. We're not sure yet, but we've got crews in and around that area and we've got plenty of aircraft available. So we got on top of that very, very quickly yesterday, and we're not expecting that to happen in any great degree today, but we're definitely prepared for it in the event that it does happen.
So it's a sort of watch and see situation at the moment.
Yeah, that's right. And we're talking to communities in that area, and everyone should be activating their bushfire survival plans and monitoring conditions and making sure they're keeping an eye on things in case something does change in the weather.
And as we were saying earlier, those people that are in the area or just over the border in New South Wales should be listening to their local ABC, which is the Wodonga ABC as well, to keep the latest information there. Now, what about New South Wales firefighters? Are they helping out in Victoria, and how many have gone over?
Yeah, we've sent a lot of crews down into Victoria. We sent about 92 firefighters from RFS and National Parks down yesterday by plane to crew some trucks in Victoria. And we've sent overnight another three strike teams this morning into Victoria. So we've got plenty of crews. We've been moving crews down from Sydney during the day today to make sure that we've got plenty of firefighters available in southern New South Wales, but also able to help our Victorian colleagues as they see those catastrophic conditions today.
Yeah, so they'll need help, but you don't want to be caught short.
No, exactly right. So we've been moving both our aircraft down towards the southern part of the state. So we've got extra aircraft on call today, and we've got extra strike teams ready, from a couple from RFS and one from Fire and Rescue New South Wales moved down to the southern part of the state. They'll be down there for a couple of days just to give extra support to local crews in the event that we need it.
And what's the Weather Bureau telling? What's the latest from the bomb about the conditions over the next couple of days?
Yeah, today we've got that widespread high-fi danger across the state with extreme conditions in the southern parts of the state. And then tomorrow, as the weather moves through Victoria and comes into New South Wales, we'll see some extreme conditions running from Sydney through the Illawarra and down into southern parts of the state, as well as widespread high-fi danger across other parts of the state. So regardless of where we are in New South Wales tomorrow, we need to be monitoring conditions and we need to make sure that we're protecting ourselves and looking after ourselves in the event that fires do start.
And it seems to be that that heat will continue into tomorrow as well for many parts of the state.
Yeah, it's going to be hot and windy tomorrow. We've got some concerns about fires starting. So we think we'll see a number of total fire bans tomorrow. So, you know, it's good for everyone to check in the morning and monitor conditions and think about what you're going to do for the day and, you know, make sure you keep yourself and your families and your friends safe.
And you're not so worried about the ember strikes, but maybe some dry lightning.
Yeah, that's right. Dry lightning is a concern. With that fire yesterday in Victoria, started its own fire weather and started some lightning storm, and we think that might have been what started the fire across the border. So we're monitoring conditions all the time, and we're just working really closely with Victorians on those fires, and if there's any sort of lightning strikes, we're getting onto those pretty quickly.
Commissioner, appreciate your time on the program today. Thanks for that, and good luck in the next few days.
Thank you. Take care.
It's coming up to 11 minutes past 12. Well, on News Breakfast this morning, the ABC spoke to Emergency Management Minister Christy McBain, who was in Murrumbula.
Minister, a short time ago, we crossed live to Ruffey and we spoke to the CFA captain, George Noy. It was a really tearful interview. He had a really rough night, as you can imagine. We asked him what the town needs right now from the point of view of support. Have a listen.
We need machinery to start clearing roads so we can get access. We need food, fuel and water. We need the vets and the livestock people to start assessing and destroying stock and burying them. I haven't been through this before, so yeah, it's a massive process that we're going to have to start doing, and it's not days, it's going to be weeks.
Minister, when will George Noy and the Ruffey community get what they need?
It's really devastating hearing someone speak like that. Our community here went through that, you know, 6 years ago, and there's a fire burning just north of me, just out of Cobargo in a place called Yowrie, which is impacted by the Black Summer, and just south of me, just out of Mallacoota. So I completely understand that level of emotion and frustration. The National Emergency Management Agency has set up a crisis coordination team, and we're working with Victoria, New South Wales and South Australia on a range of things. But I'll make sure that I reach directly out to the Victorian Minister after this.
That's Emergency Management Minister Christy McBain, and we also heard from George Noy, who's the CFA captain at Ruffey in Victoria, very upset and concerned about issues there, as we heard. Turning our attention more to New South Wales now and around the Batemans Bay area, of course, hard hit by the Black Summer bushfires as well. We were talking to Greg Mullins on the program about it yesterday. He was based there at the time. Well, Jacinta Cunahan is the ABC reporter based in the southeast, and she's in Batemans Bay at the moment. Good afternoon.
Hi, Michael.
So you've been following the fires in New South Wales generally as well. What's the intelligence you're getting from the authorities at the moment?
Yeah, well, at the moment there's a total fire ban for four councils today, and down in the southeast in the Monaro Alpine, Southern Slopes, Eastern and Southern Riverina. There's currently 37 bush and grass fires in New South Wales, but they're all at advice level. There is 9 yet to be contained, but RFS are staying across a lot of that. Where I'm sitting in Batemans Bay, the fire of possible concern is in that Yowrie region. It's about 20 k's northwest of Cobargo. It's covering more than 100 hectares. But as I said before, it's still only at watch and act, and RFS is throwing everything at it to control it. Further down south, in just south of Eden, there's a number of small fires that popped up. These are mainly due to lightning strikes yesterday and overnight. But RFS are just checking on any of those areas. But there is one, a big fire in Mallacoota, just across the border. So they're making sure that that doesn't spread as much as they can. But the biggest concern is obviously in Victoria, and that is where some catastrophic fires are happening. They're trying to get control of the blaze in Walwa, Kooriong, and there are some small ones popping up in New South Wales, but authorities are just asking people to stay vigilant and keep on the Hazards Near Me app just to make sure that they're across the latest advice.
Yes, and keep listening to ABC Local Radio and the ABC Local Radio in Victoria as well. If you're listening to the Country Hour here in New South Wales, maybe listen to your local ABC to get the latest there as well. That's what the authorities are saying. What about the locals and what's the atmosphere like? You know, lots of smoke around. People are getting a bit nervous, getting triggered from five or 6 years ago?
Yeah, well, here in Batemans Bay, we don't have at the moment, there's no fires that are right here. So it's just hot. It's the second day of a 3-day heat wave that's come through the area. We've got temperatures in the high 30s to 40s. There is an extreme heatwave warning for many areas down here, including Illawarra, South Coast, Southern Tablelands, Snowy Mountains, Southwest Slopes and Riverina. So it's just hot. There's still a lot of tourists around that I've noticed. So beaches are packed. There's a lot of people out enjoying the heat. But as you mentioned, this is also an area that has had those catastrophic bushfires 6 years ago. And this is the most intense heat wave we've seen since those bushfires. So locals are understandably concerned as people with properties are making preparations. But, you know, RFS is across it at the moment. And, at the moment we're just going to watch and see how we go. But just for me, I went to get a lot of people on just like a daily heat level. I went to go get my car inspected this morning, and mechanics are saying, please come in as early as you can because it's just so hot. We don't want to have people out there. So I guess the message is also stay hydrated as we go through this hot temperatures.
Mm, yes, indeed. And as you were saying, we're going to hear about that Yowrie fire in a moment as well, and plenty of smoke around. We're getting some text, people saying hot gusty winds, tinder dry land, dams drying up, virtually no rain at all during the last 12 months. This is in the Riverina. Also water tank levels low as well, so people are concerned. And a lot of smoke around areas like, as you say, Kooriong, and people noticing smoke plumes at Holbrook as well. So obviously people are, you know, fingers crossed and concerned, and the temperature set to rise again tomorrow before that cool change comes through. I mean, that's what people are hoping for, see that cool change, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. And it's supposed to come through. So tomorrow is going to be where we're at, is going to be just as hot as today.
Or hotter, maybe.
Or hotter. And it will be, the change will come through, though. The southwest to southerly change will come through in the afternoon. But then Sydney is going to cop some of that heat. But I looked at the weather before, and next week it's going to be very cool and raining. So fingers crossed that does come through to give us a bit of respite.
Jacinta, appreciate your time on the program today. Thanks for that.
Thanks so much, Michael.
Jacinta Cunahan, who's an ABC reporter based in the southeast, she's in Batemans Bay at the moment, which is one of those areas hit by the fires in 2019, 2020, of course. Now farmers are anxiously watching that fire northwest of Cobargo, burning in remote national park, the Brass Knocker Fire at Yowrie. It's burnt through about 100, just over 100 hectares, up from 19 hectares yesterday. There's no immediate threat to life or property, but firefighters say increased winds and lower humidity mean the conditions are between 30 to 40% worse today, and could get worse again tomorrow. Keith Dance runs cattle at Ballara, just north of the fire. He says he's not sure how the fire will behave through those areas that were previously burnt during Black Summer?
Interesting scenario. It will be the first fire in the regrowth, so it'll be interesting to see how it performs. We're all at six and sevens is wondering what will happen with the next major fire. So hopefully they've got a heap of choppers running around dumping water on it, so they might be able to contain it. But your fire trails that you have around the place these days are really only escape routes. Vegetation, you know, 30 foot high either side or taller, but still very green. To get it to really go, I think you'd have to have the hot howling westerly on it and some grass underneath to lift the flame into the foliage, but we'll have to wait and see.
Have you been out into the bush post the fires? How significant is the regrowth in those areas that were hit in that 1920 period?
It is virtually like a bamboo crop. You can't walk through it. It's that thick, and it's a mass of wattle and eucalypts. And it now is probably, between 20 and 30 feet high, and suffering with moisture stress now, which it hasn't had since the fires, really. So we've had, nearly 6 years of rapid growth, thick growth. It's still very green. The foliage is still very green, but it's starting to stress now. So, new ballpark, I think.
Ballarat farmer Keith Dance speaking there to Josh Becker. And just going through some of the texts here, Andrew's texted in from Watermulla. He was saying, would today be a good time to invite a coalition spokesperson to explain once again why they're resisting serious action on climate change? Just thinking, says Andrew. And Dave in Trundle saying, hot gusty winds, tinder dry land, dams drying up, no rain virtually for the last 12 months. Homestead water levels dropping rapidly, and Dave says we haven't really got into summer yet, and he says it's really not looking good for Western New South Wales. You're listening to The Country Hour. It's 21 past 12.
The Country Hour. Celebrating 80 years.
Understanding how they grow best.
The Country Hour.
Nourishing the people in their own community.
Part of your community for 80 years.
It's highly regarded.
Weekdays at noon.
Go straight to the source.
On ABC Radio and on the ABC Listen app.
Well, spare a thought for hydroponic farmers on these hot days working in greenhouses in sweltering conditions. Luckily for tomato and lettuce grower Ali Wood, that's mostly not her, which is a perk of being the boss's daughter. But the extremes of weather, from rain events to days of high heat and humidity, can of course play havoc on the crops. Whilst at the Yamba Farmers and Producers Market this week, Kim Honan caught up with Ali from Woody's Farm, and the fact that you might have heard of her before because she's a little bit famous.
It definitely is famous around here. We grow really good tomatoes. Yeah. They speak for themselves, actually.
They sure do. And you've been on the farm, your entire life?
Roughly. My dad started tomato farming when I was probably 7 or 8, and I'm 29 now.
Well, you were almost born into it.
almost. It feels like I was born into it, tomato and lettuce sandwiches my entire childhood.
Nothing wrong with that. Hey, you got a customer, I think. I'll let you. Yep, she's going to come back. She will come back, yeah?
She wants our tomatoes when they're sold out.
Oh, no. You sold out. Do you often sell out?
Depends. We don't have a lot of stock at the moment. We're just waiting for our new crop to be ready. Yeah. They take a long time to turn red.
Yeah.
They stay green for a very long time.
Yeah. Well, last year would have been a difficult year with you hit by Alfred.
Yeah, Alfred was bad. It's always quite hard to farm with the weather. I think that's our biggest problem, is the weather more than anything. Just the heat and humid and rain after rain after rain.
Yeah. And then days like this where, you know, heat wave warnings.
Yeah. And if it's 40 outside, it's about 50 inside where the tomatoes are grown. And they like hot weather, but they don't like extremely hot weather. So
it's... And how do you manage that, having to work inside a greenhouse every day?
Luckily, I don't have to do that, being the boss's daughter. Yeah. But I have had my days in there. You just sort of push through. It is very, very hard to do it. It's hard to find workers that are willing to do it and do a good job of it. But, it's very labour-intensive growing tomatoes.
Well, luckily here at the Yamba Farmers Market, it has been hot, but we just got a really nice coastal breeze.
Yeah, we did. I need that constant. If you could do that, that would be great.
What is it that you love about the job?
I love the community. I love that I'm the face of the business. I love feedback. I also just love being outdoors, really. And, yeah, I don't have to deal with too many people. But, yeah, it's a lovely job. Yeah.
Well, it's International Year of the Woman Farmer this year, declared by the United Nations. Are you surprised?
Yeah, I am. I don't see myself as a proper farmer. My dad does a lot of the hard work. I get to just ride along with him. But yes, I'm very happy of that. I think recognition for women is always a great thing.
Yeah. Do you think there could be more done to support females wanting to get into whether it's farming or fishing or any other aspect of agriculture?
Yeah, I think just in a whole, it could be easier for people to actually do it. Any gender, you know what I mean, but especially for women. It is hard because I think I've had it, people look at me because I'm a woman, don't think that I could do what a man could do in the industry. But I think if you have a great mentor, whether that be a man or a woman, you can actually accomplish anything in the industry. Everything is learnable and everything you could do if you put your mind to it. Yeah, it's just, yeah. It's all learning as well. Like, my dad never got taught how to grow tomatoes, and he's just taught himself over the years. And he's still learning to this day, yeah.
Ali Wood is a tomato and lettuce farmer from Woody's Farm at Maroro near Iluka, talking there to Kim Honan. You're listening to The Country Hour. It's coming up to 26 minutes past 12. Well, this year, 2026, has been designated by the United Nations as the International Year of the Woman Farmer. The UN says its global campaign is aimed at recognising women's indispensable yet often overlooked contributions to global agri-food systems and to galvanise efforts to close persistent gender gaps. On the New South Wales North Coast, the Yamba Farmers and Producers Market has achieved parity with 50% of the stallholders being female. So too is a market coordinator, Deborah Novak, who also chairs advocacy group Clarence Valley Food Incorporated.
It's going to be a fantastic year for female farmers to be able to have this platform to be able to raise awareness of what women actually do on farm, whether it's livestock, whether it's horticulture, whether it's, you know, fishing or what have you. Having women identified in a role that supports either themselves or supporting, you know, business partners or husbands and the family, I mean, they're multitasking across everything. So it's going to be just a great year to be able to share that knowledge with everybody.
And in 2026, what challenges do you think female farmers still face?
Look, to be honest, and I see it across a lot of what I do here in the Northern Rivers as well, the barriers are, I think a lot of it's around policy and farming altogether, because there's a lot of government policies that actually don't support farmers whatsoever, so that impacts women. And then you have a lot of that lack of awareness of women's role on the farm. You know, they're not only coordinating farm practices, they're also coordinating family, they're coordinating children, they might have a separate business as well. So it's also being identified as it's as running it as a business, and that for me is, you know, a lot of people don't think of farming as a business when it is. It's not, you know, it's not a lot. It is a lifestyle choice, but it is also a business, and there's a lot of regulations around running a business these days.
So, International Year of the Woman Farmer. It's also the Chinese Year of the Horse, the Fire Horse, and you think they both align well?
Oh, look, absolutely. When you look at what horses have done for mankind and what they've contributed and their, you know, their resilience, their, you know, just as a companion too, you can, I feel, look at, you know, also align that with, you know, what women do as well, whether it's by themselves or, you know, when you actually look into the structure of a horse, they're, you know, a mob of horses, the stallion thinks he's boss, but the lead mare knows she's boss. That's the difference. I know that might ruffle a few feathers, but No, look, and I think, you know, Year of the Horse, it's going to, you know, when I think of the horse, I think of, you know, the Light Horse, because we held a ceremony with the Light Horse recently, what they've been used for. And I know horses in Australia, you know, they think of thoroughbreds, but they don't think of them in that military context of what they've also given as well. And that's the same with women, you know, women have contributed, whether it was, you know, in that military context or being at home looking after the farm or looking after when, you know, their men went to war. So there's a lot of synergy there, a lot of overlap, and I think that, you know, horses are about moving forward, that, you know, that sort of, you know, that Chinese philosophy. So I think, you know, women are clearly moving forward as well, and I would like to think that in 2026, you know, there's going to be a lot less barriers broken down so that they can be, you know, recognised for what they actually contribute.
Deborah Novak, who's the chair of the Clarence Valley Food Incorporated, the coordinator of the Yamba Farmers and Producers Market. You're listening to The Country Hour. And getting some text, someone, Frankie's texted in saying, I'm new to Wagga and this is my first experience with bushfires. What radio frequency should I tune into for emergency updates, please? Probably not necessarily needed to change for Wagga, but certainly people on the border might need to change. But Frankie, I'll actually bring those details about the Listen app and also the details for the AM radio as well. I'll give it to you in a sec. I'll just have to hop out of the studio and find out what they are, and I'll bring them to those listeners that might be listening to the Country Hour around the border area and should be maybe listening to local ABC, so we can give them some details on that shortly. So thanks for that text, Frankie. I'll come back to what you're asking a little bit later on. It's 29 minutes to one on the Country Hour. It's time to get some news headlines now from Rhiannon Solomon-Marin. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Michael. Three people are missing in Victoria, where a major bushfire is tearing through the centre of the state. Authorities say a man, a woman and a child were at a house near Longwood East when a firefighter told them to take shelter as the blaze approached. When they returned, the house was destroyed and the trio haven't been found. It's still difficult for authorities to access that area due to the ongoing emergency. Here in New South Wales, temperatures are soaring into the 40s today as those heatwave conditions continue to intensify. Parts of the Riverina will climb to 46 degrees and a total fire ban is in place for four areas across the state's south and southeast. The heatwave will continue tomorrow with the Weather Bureau forecasting weather conditions to ease on Sunday. Federal Opposition Leader Susan Lee says the Prime Minister should have shown some contrition for not having called a Commonwealth Royal Commission sooner. Anthony Albanese yesterday announced a federal inquiry into the Bondi terrorist attack following weeks of escalating public pressure. Ms Lee has welcomed the announcement despite wanting to see three commissioners instead of one. And the US space agency NASA says it will bring crew members on the International Space Station back to Earth earlier than planned due to what it called a medical concern with one of the astronauts. The agency says the early return is not an emergency and the crew member's condition is stable, but it's not giving any further details, citing that crew member's privacy. Senior space agency officials say it's the first such return in the station's 25-year history.
Is that right?
Yeah.
There you go.
I guess that's all you can do is just send them back.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, I think there was a case where in the past where they were monitoring the heartbeat of one of the – this is a long time ago – and they discovered some issues with the sort of irregular heartbeat that one of the astronauts, one of the male astronauts was having in the – I think that was in the 70s actually.
Yeah.
But they didn't bring them home.
Interesting.
But I think they were only going to be up there for a few days, so
yeah.
But they sort of noticed along the way that that was a bit of an issue. But yeah,
fair enough.
Yeah, they're obviously monitoring that stuff closely.
Mm.
Thanks for that, Rhiannon.
Thanks, Michael.
It's coming up to 27 minutes to one. Let's get some get the latest on the weather from Ed Medlock at the Bureau. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Michael.
So hot conditions in New South Wales and obviously some fire warnings as well around the state.
That's right, yeah. So we have total fire bans at the moment issued by the Rural Fire Service for the Monaro Alpine Southern Slopes, Eastern Riverina and Southern Riverina today. And it's looking like it's going to spread further southeast and up the coast tomorrow, including most areas in that southeastern quadrant of New South Wales, up through the Illawarra and maybe even all the way up to the Hunter tomorrow. Those two bands, so yeah, clear skies both days. Might be a bit of raised dust in the west as well as it gets a bit windy during the Saturday. as the trough makes its way across, which is also bringing a cool change behind it.
So that cool change is coming later tomorrow, is that right?
So yeah, of course, it depends on where you are in New South Wales,
yeah,
but it's starting in the far southwest of New South Wales, beginning on Saturday morning. So those in the Riverina in the far west will get some reprieve from the heat tomorrow. For example, you know, if you're in Wagga, you're going to see temperatures of 43 degrees today is the forecast maximum temperature, and then you'll see a decrease to around 36 tomorrow, which of course is still high, but a significant decrease in temperatures. And those and the southern Riverina might only get up to 30 degrees as that change comes through during the early hours of Saturday. But the coast will get that change a lot later, mostly by the afternoon on Saturday, commencing in Bega on the south coast, and then reaching the Illawarra and the Hunter maybe during the overnight period of Saturday or the late evening.
There were some concerns raised when we were talking to the RFS about half an hour ago or so on the program, and they were worried about some possible dry lightning strikes and things like that when this change comes through. Is that an issue?
At the moment, the only places we're really looking at thunderstorms possibly developing is on that south coast or Illawarra region as the subtly change makes its way up. We're currently not forecasting much thunderstorms along the front itself inland, so it's looking like the risk is quite marginal. It looked quite likely to yesterday, and that's what we were forecasting, but it's kind of dropped off a little bit. And yeah, storms only forecast for that south coast and Illawarra region, where if they do form, it'll be dry lightning in those areas, which could start new fires.
But in terms of the wind, it's going to ramp up a bit. That could be an issue in changing the wind if we have some fires.
Yeah, so it's quite significantly so as well, which is why a lot of those areas aren't in the extreme fire danger category today, but they are likely to go into extreme fire danger tomorrow as the winds pick up from the northwest and increase to 40 to 50 kilometres per hour with gusts even higher. Is what's promoting a lot of that fire activity. And then even behind, once the temperature drops behind those fires during that overnight period, the temperature is still quite high for places on the central Illawarra and Hunter quite late into the night. So the fire activity could continue for quite a long period before getting that reprieve after the subtly changes move through.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is if there is a fire and we have a wind change, it could change the character of that fire and make it more dangerous as a result.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, even though it's a cooler kind of condition, moister conditions, it's still changing the direction of the wind, which, is changing the fire activity, which, although maybe not having as large of a fire, it's now going in a different direction and being a bit more erratic.
And what chance is there of some rain or decent rain?
At the moment, the earliest indication is Sunday. This trough that's causing the subtly change doesn't actually make it all the way to the coast by Monday. It sort of stalls around just north of maybe only reaching about Newcastle and then crossing through central parts of New South Wales, and kind of stalls there throughout Sunday. And it actually taps into some of that moisture coming from the north owing to that tropical depression that's going up there at the moment. It's looking like showers and thunderstorms on Sunday broadly across central west Hunter area, and also just the remainder of northeast New South Wales on the Sunday. But for those in the south, there's not really an indication of any rain on the way in the next few days.
Right. Okay. So those out west still quite hot and up into the sort of high 40s.
That's right. Yes. I mean, there is some reprieve in terms of the temperatures being maybe close to the low 40s during Saturday in the lower western once that change comes through, and then by Sunday we're looking at temperatures in the mid-30s in the far west.
Does the change affect the whole state? Is it affecting the northeast as well?
No, not quite. The northeast is also, in terms of temperatures, a bit more mild compared to the rest of the state. They're not under a heat wave warning, so today forecast temperatures in those low to mid-30s across the northeast, unless you're in the Tablelands, Northern Slopes, is closer to the mid-30s. And then the change doesn't actually reach those areas until late Sunday, where it might just drop into the high 20s. So it's less of a contributing factor to this particular system.
Okay, so we'll keep a watching brief on that. Thanks for that, Ed.
Cheers, Michael.
It's coming up to 21 minutes to one here on the New South Wales Country Hour. John's texted in with some details of regular updates on the Victorian border fires on 1494 AM. And that's ABC Goulburn Murray. Now, you can also go to ABC Goulburn Murray live audio on the ABC Listen app, of course. So go to the Listen app and search for ABC Goulburn Murray. It'll, I understand that when there's connectivity is not great during bushfires, sometimes the Listen app is not as reliable as AM radio. But on AM radio, as John was saying, 1494 on the AM dial, and on the FM dial in and around the towns, the FM signal is 106.5 FM. So wouldn't want to encourage you to be listening to the Victorian Country Hour all the time. You should be listening to the New South Wales Country Hour, except if you're on the border and you need to find out about bushfire information. And of course, stay tuned to your local ABC. It's 20 minutes to one.
The Country Hour, part of your community and your life.
It's nostalgic.
For 80 years.
Hanging out with my brothers in the back of a ute.
The Country Hour.
They just naturally grow a beautiful shape.
Celebrating 80 years of telling rural stories on ABC Radio.
I'll give you some more details of some other frequencies as well in a moment. But first up today, one of the highest peaks in the world of shearing record, the world records of shearing have been conquered with New Zealander Simon Goss shearing 732 strong wool ewes in 9 hours. The tally he had broke the existing record held by Matt Smith for a decade by just one sheep, setting a benchmark that will be hard to beat. It was Goss's second world record after he joined forces with Jamie Skiffington to shear 1,470 strong wool lambs in 9 hours back in 2023. He says it's an honour to join a list of renowned shearers to have previously held that record.
To be honest, I don't think it's quite fit in just yet. Yeah, it's hard to put into words when you start looking at the names, you know, the previous record holders. You know, I've got their names on that list. Like, there's some absolute legends there. You know, the likes of, you know, Matt Smith himself, Rodney Sutton, Darren Ford, David Fagan. To then now have my name sitting next to theirs is something that will probably take a wee while to really sink in.
And to break the record by one sheep, that means you were grabbing your last sheep with literally seconds to spare. Did you think back throughout the day and think, geez, if I'd been 5 seconds slower there or 3 seconds slower there, then you wouldn't have broken the record?
On the day, no, I didn't think that at all. But thinking about it now, like the last run, like it was pretty, like even though it looked tight at the end, but like we still grabbed the last sheep, I think I might have had 40-odd seconds to go. So in record senses, that's actually heaps of time. But if you look back in the previous runs, I think I grabbed the first sheep with 4 or 5 seconds to go, and I think it might even have been the third run I grabbed my last sheep with not even a second left to go. So, you know, that's probably where the record was broken, but, you know, without even knowing it. So, yeah, on the day, didn't think of it at all. It was just the process, and we still had to shear the whole day out. But, yeah, thinking about it now, it's, you definitely look back at those little key moments that, you know, we were able to take.
Is it more difficult to shear a big tally under those very rigorous, strict record conditions where every sheep is scrutinised to make sure it's joined to a particular standard?
Yeah, definitely. With, you know, people standing over you pretty much all day, you know, making sure everything's up to scratch, there's a lot of pressure on that side of it. You know, whereas I think it might have been a couple of years ago, I was lucky enough to do a shed tally. My boss at the time, and he'd set it up where we crutched out some ewes, so they weren't up to record standards, so they didn't have the 3 kilos of wool, and the crutching on their bum was a lot bigger and stuff like that. And I saw 804 ewes in the 9 hour period, so which was, you know, it's a few more than the actual record, but because there wasn't any judges and, you know, there wasn't all the spectators, and it was sort of more relaxed, and, you know, we're able to, you know, move things on pretty quick. But then on the record side of it, like, yeah, there's a lot of pressure with the judges, the 3 kilos of wool, the small bum crutch on the sheep, you know, everything's got to be right. And it is definitely tougher, and it puts a lot of strain on, you know, the mental side of things.
The 9 hour workday, Simon, that's a bit of a foreign concept for us in Australia. How often would you work a 9 hour day typically?
A couple of seasons ago, it'd have been a good 3 years solid, I worked for a contractor, Jeff Dorset in Rotorua, and that's pretty much his sole workday every day. was just 9 hours. So, yeah, for 3 years, I pretty much did 9-hour days every day of the year, pretty much. Whereas in the last 2 years, I've moved on to down into Dannevirke working for Rod Sutton. And, yeah, for Rod, I think we only do a couple of 9-hour days a year just on certain sheds, whereas, you know, everything else with the 8-hour day starting at 7, finishing at 5.
Simon, your family's a pretty well-known name in the industry, isn't it? Both your mum, your dad, your sister?
Yeah, mum was a top wool handler. She, you know, throughout New Zealand, she was one of the best, really. And even in the world, she was it 2014? She travelled to Ireland with the New Zealand team and was lucky enough to be second in the world. So, you know, she was pretty up there. And she travelled to Aussie many times with the Trans-Tasman team, and she won a few tests and stuff like that. And Dad, he'll take it. He wasn't really a good shearer, but in my eyes, he was pretty good. Yeah, so, they were in the industry earlier on and, you know, gave us a good stepping forward, like, into the industry and let us know what can be achieved if you put a bit of effort in and put your work towards what you want to do. And then, yeah, obviously my sister, she's sure as well. And, you know, she'd gone away from shearing now. I don't think she's touched a sheep in a while, but, yeah, she's in the rugby side of things. She's, doing her thing at the moment.
Simon Goss, the new holder of the 9-hour strong wool ewe shearing record, and he was speaking there to Angus Verley.
80 years of the Country Hour.
You'd get in trouble for talking at church on a Sunday, but you'd get in more trouble if you were talking during the weather, during the Country Hour, any day of the week. That was always a good childhood memory of ours, and we've learned very quickly that this is an incredibly important part of the day, around that 12:30 every day, and you don't talk when the weather is on.
The Country Hour, celebrating 80 years of telling rural stories.
Well, future generations of the Angus beef industry have descended upon Tamworth for the Angus Youth National Roundup. The event provides a learning platform for anyone aged between 8 and 25, and the competitions across cattle preparation, handling, showing and judging, as well as educational sessions and team building activities. While all of the youngsters were busy competing in the judging yesterday, Lara Webster did manage to find a few minutes to chat with the Vice President of Angus Australia, Peter Collins, and 24-year-old Sam Parrish, a Roundup committee member and 2026 RAS Rural Achiever finalist. Lara started out with Peter, who told her it's the biggest Roundup yet, with some 287 participants.
We've got so many young people coming through this, and they just, everyone comes back every year. And when, I remember when Sam comes through, if he just wants to move a bit closer, but when Sam come through as a young guy, he'd done this, and a special competitor. And if we can build these young people up to be like Sam now runs the show with a team of committee, it's not just about being with the cattle, it's about networking people and the fun they have. We make it fun, for it, as much fun as we can. It's just a fantastic event run by our young people. Angus Australia are the ones that actually put it on, but our committee's all run by Sam and a heap of this committee are all young people. It's their job to run it for that year. They've got to budget it, they can do it, and they make it so much fun for all these kids. Look at these kids running around. Well, we want radio, we can't say that.
No, you've got to paint a picture.
Yeah, we've got to paint a picture. There's a group up there underneath a tree in the shade learning about junior judging, how to actually do that. It's not actually with animals, it's actually learning how to junior judge. There's a team in the arena there, junior judging. There's a team out here getting talked to about how they went at junior judging. Everyone that comes back.
This isn't just about building the beef producers of tomorrow. It's everyone in the chain, isn't it?
It's the whole chain. Yeah, our meat producers, our feedlotters, our vets. You know, it's not just one thing. It's everything. You know, I followed Sam's thing all the way through him. You know, a young fella come through here, and he's had some absolutely amazing job. The one he's got at the moment, just amazing job, and he's very good at it. And it's probably through connections through here, the Roundup, that he's got there.
Well, Sam, I was going to bring you in. Tell us a bit about Sam. You obviously have been a part of this for a long time as a competitor and now as a mentor, I suppose.
I wouldn't go quite go as a mentor, I don't think. The mentor is probably to the left of me here in Pete. And that's probably another aspect we haven't touched on is there's so many different connections across this show that gives you such a network amongst ourselves in our own age group and probably within an age range of about 10 years or competing. And then you've got all these stud producers that give up their time and give back. And ag is a really tough industry to go into. The bad days do come. When they come, they actually stick around for a long time. It takes a lot of resilience. These events build those resilience, they build the passion for the industry. And I think that the big part about this whole Angus Youth Roundup and the movement within it in the ag industry is that we're building interest, which in a world at the moment where people don't know where their meat comes from, they think it comes from the supermarket, not from a cow, or they think, you know, strawberry milk comes from a pink cow, whatever it is, it's really important that we write the script for that and that we educate people. And I guess creating interest in the industry, educating people, and then creating a network amongst mentors and everything in between and amongst ourselves creates a really, really valuable passion for our industry that gets us through those tough days.
Well, Sam, tell me, how have the roundups shaped you from that young kid to who you are today and what you're doing in the industry?
It's amazing how many connections you find when you go through, I guess, just everyday life, whether it's down the supermarket or whether it's you go through a meat chain or whether you're selling something, how many people that you find that are from Roundup, whether it's a meat buyer, whether it's your friend down the road that you're trying to do paperwork to try and send an NVD form in, they're helping you with it on the other end of the line. Now, at times I've ring a processor and got someone, a mentor from here or whatever it is, or just trying to sell a product, whether it's genetics or in our case a service, and the amount of people I get on the phone, they remember me from Roundup or I remember them from Roundup and say, oh, how have you been, this, that. It creates much more of a connection and it makes the job a lot easier rather than trying to blind call someone and not know anything about them. It creates a base for our whole industry. It's a small world out there.
And I didn't ask before where you're from and what you are doing now.
I'm very fortunate to probably actually live out of a suitcase, I think. And some people think I'm mad for saying I'm fortunate for that. My mail gets sent to Forbes in New South Wales, but I get to work across the whole eastern seaboard and nearly nationally and internationally now within my job. So I work for a reproduction company that specialises in a lot of different repro technologies. And that's probably another part that this show has developed throughout the years. We've talked about 30 plus years. And throughout that time, there's been so many changes in our world, in our industry and efficiencies. And learning that and the journey of that, every single roundup's different, which we're really, really thankful for. There's some fundamentals that we teach every single time, but every roundup we find those new technologies, those better efficiencies, and then we teach them to kids, and then they take them and take them even further and better our industry and make sure that our industry has a lot of a power to actually stand up in the world.
Vice President of Angus Australia, Peter Collins, and 24-year-old Sam Parrish from Forbes, and the Angus Youth National Roundup finishes on Sunday, January 11.
You're listening to The Country Hour.
On ABC Radio New South Wales.
Hello, I'm Annie Guest. Join me for The World Today. A Royal Commission on Anti-Semitism in the wake of the Bondi attack will go ahead, but will politicians now unite behind it? Devastating fires in central Victoria destroy properties and livestock, while other parts of the country swelter through another day of a heatwave. And turning plastic waste into art forms, the creative Aussies striving to raise environmental awareness. Those stories and more coming up on The World Today at lunchtime.
On Country Breakfast this weekend, a last summer edition looking at how native vegetation is growing back in Victoria after the devastating Black Summer fires, even as the state deals with more catastrophic conditions. We're tasting homegrown coffee in North Queensland, and we'll meet a former chef in Tasmania who's decided growing food is better than cooking it. Join me, David Claughton, and the rural team as we look back on some of our best stories from 2025 on RN at 6 a.m. or any time on the ABC Listen app. Just search for Country Breakfast.
But here on the Country Hour, getting some texts. So the ABC Listen app, ABC Goulburn Murray, if you want to get the local information on the bushfires there. Also 1494 AM on the AM dial as well. 106.5 FM. But the ABC Riverina in New South Wales is 675 AM, but that's for ABC Riverina. So that's in New South Wales. So just giving you some of the frequencies there that might be helpful today or into the future. It's coming up to 6 minutes to 1 here on the New South Wales Country Hour. Well, let's turn our attention now to the cotton industry, because for around three seasons now, grain and cotton growers around Queensland and New South Wales have been using technology to detect conditions which could cause spray drift. Weather and networked data, known as WAND, is a weather warning system that provides real-time data for growers and spray operators. Since they launched in 2023, they've now got 5,000 users with 102 towers and discussions to expand into other states. The system was established by both the Grains and Cotton Research and Development Corporations in conjunction with Goanna Ag. CEO Jay Gelotta spoke about WAND with Megan Hughes and explained how it works.
The WAND towers are very high-spec, high-quality weather stations that are able to detect hazardous spray drift conditions. So it gives growers a real-time indication of whether it's okay to proceed with spraying or they need to pause and wait for it to clear up.
So what is the hazardous condition that growers need to avoid when spraying?
Sure. So these hazardous conditions are a mix of temperature and turbulence conditions that have been developed by extensive scientific research by the Cotton Research and Development Corporation and the Grains Research and Development Corporation that is able to accurately detect and predict if those spray droplets are going to land on the target that the sprayer intended or if they're going to drift. And they'll often drift for 30, 40, 50, even 100 kilometres in any direction.
Yeah, that's a long way, isn't it?
Yes, so it's a common cause of a lot of crop damage across Australia.
So it's been a bit over 2 years since these towers were rolled out. Could you tell me where they've been installed?
Yes, sure. So all the way from up north in Emerald, in the northern area of Queensland, all the way down through the main cotton and grains cropping regions, all the way down through Queensland, New South Wales, down to the Victorian border.
So just Queensland and New South Wales?
Yes, correct.
No.
Jay Gelotta is with Goanna Ag. He's the CEO. He was speaking there to Megan Hughes about the WAND system, Weather and Network Data System, which is helping to give information about the spray drift issue. Well, the Kempsey sale yards have roared back into action for 2026 with an annual steer and bullock sale, raising thousands of dollars for cancer research in the process. Every year for the past decade, Belmore River cattle producers Rebecca and Darren Sutherland have auctioned off a bullock at the sale and donated all proceeds to foundations for cancer research. This year's charity bullock went for $3,007, with Kempsey Stock and Land also donating $2 for every animal sold at the sale. Rebecca Sutherland told Lauren Bohane how the charity auction got started.
2014, my husband Darren lost his mum to cancer, and we thought that we could try and do something that supports cancer. And as I've said it previously, people ride bikes, people shave their heads, cut their hair, but we can raise a bullock well, and we do it well, and it's easy.
You said this is your 10th year doing it. How does the community get around it?
The community are an amazing support. Kempsey Stock and Land have our backs all of the time. They support us. The community is amazing. You know, you have farmers walk past with a couple of bucks they put in our bucket that my kids are holding. It's really, really, everyone has supported us really well over the 10 years, and it's fantastic.
This year's been a particularly difficult one on the mid-north coast. How'd you fare through it?
The toughest flood that I've been through. The bullock that we sold today was our replacement bullock. We lost our bullock, the original one for this sale, during the flood, and so it's been tough. We're getting there, but, you know, it's been a tough season, so, yeah.
Can you tell me about the bullock that you sold today?
So he is maybe a three-year-old Brahman bullock. He was, as I said, he was a replacement bullock. We came home from the flood. I had cattle on the road. I said to my husband, what are we going to do? And we picked this bullock, and he's got big horns, and he looks like a goalpost. He's super quiet. He's been great. and easy to deal with. So, yeah, nothing special about him, but he's just been, yeah, really good. So.
And how'd the auction go?
Good. So we made over $3,007 in the yard. Very, very happy. Very thankful for Kempsey Stock and Land and Everson's Meats for buying him. We are forever thankful for the support everyone gives us.
That's talking about that charity auction, Belmore River cattle producer Rebecca Sutherland at Kempsey's annual steer and bullock sale, where the proceeds go to charity, particularly for foundations looking at cancer research. You're listening to the New South Wales Country Hour. We're heading up to news time. No markets today. It's heading up to 1 o'clock.